John.
Hey, world.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. Ryan is absent once again. I forget what we said he was doing this time.
He said he was at like an orgy with Busey.
Oh yes, he's at an all over 70 orgy. Him and Gary Busey hanging out again.
Yeah, and they're all Republicans.
Right. This is just I assume everyone over 70 is Republican at this point.
That's a good point.
So, but yeah, he's getting on with some old people.
To each his own.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's how he and Busey get down.
It's mostly males, right?
Mostly
dominated by
mostly
males.
I mean, there will probably be a couple of women there, but no, it's mostly men.
Just old men and Ben Gay, dear God.
He's gonna come back smelling like the stuff.
Oh, God.
We're gonna plow ahead without him here with just any random game or topic that we feel like talking about. I got a bunch of notes. You got a couple of games to talk about. So let's go ahead and get it started.
Do I?
I thought you said you had a couple of games. Do you not?
Maybe.
Okay, you're
Maybe
playing.
Going.
You're playing World of Warcraft again.
I'm playing that.
And you're playing Hearthstone again.
Yeah.
Was there anything
Did
new?
You talking about it last time about those games?
We talked about Hearthstone a few months ago. Is there anything new, or is it just kind of getting back into more of the same?
Pretty much more of the same.
Okay. So we won't talk about Hearthstone. That was it.
That's
that
funny.
Was Hearthstone right there.
Yeah.
Unless you want to look up some card names and I'll guess what they are.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Okay, you look some up.
That may be fun.
So you get some on tap, and I'm going to give some wrap-up thoughts on a couple of games that I have finished. So I finished Tokyo Mirage Sessions for the Wii U, of course.
That was the kids, but the weapons and
yes. Yes, it was the Wii U RPG that you were watching me play last time. So it took about 50 hours to finish, and I didn't 100% everything. There were a couple of things that I ended up clearing 100% just by happenstance. I made it a point to do all the side quests for the characters. Each of the different...
You were doing side quests?
I know,
never.
Right? It was not as taxing in this game as it was in, say, Xenoblade Chronicles. Each character, there's... maybe 7 or 8 characters. Some are playable, some are not. But each of them have 3 side quests associated with them. And as you progress in the narrative of the game, they unlock, and it has something to do with their personality, their story arc or something. But
about why they've gone to this life and...
Yeah, something like that.
About how her modeling career was only... It was supposed to start as a modeling career, but now she's into pornography and, you know, various other things. That's how it works, right?
I didn't read
into the text.
I mean, there was, like, we'll see, one of the non-playable characters, the boss, I forget her name, she runs this talent agency. She did begin her career as a model.
Well, there you go.
Didn't go into pornography. I mean, this is a game, I believe this game is rated mature, but it's not that mature. And there's a whole side quest with her, like, wanting to fulfill her modeling career, so she did like one more photo shoot with this photographer.
One
she
last,
one last job, and you had to find like this special lens.
I'm telling you,
you look weird without your glasses.
I do look weird without my glasses. I took my glasses off, by the way.
Yeah, he didn't like come here without his corrective lenses. You do like you are required to wear them. Yes, like to drive.
You can't drive. Yeah,
yeah.
I killed a bird on the way here.
Flew right in front of my car. Intentionally?
Yeah, well, I saw their chilling. No, I was driving and like flew in front and I smacked it and went thud on my windshield.
Are you sure it's dead though? You like pulled over?
Well, I didn't like stop for it.
It is.
I went best of luck. I kept going. That got dark.
When I was in Michigan last week,
you hit a guy and went best of luck. He kept going.
Yeah, we killed a man. Yes.
Killed a man.
No. We were driving behind this other car. It was late at night. We were heading back to Dez's relative's house, who we were staying with for the week. And the car in front of us, which was amazing that we actually saw another vehicle on the road in this fucking podunk village. But
What, like Amish country?
Oh god, it was awful. It was just terrible. Like the store in town was just was called the General Store, and it was just like this absolute shithole gas station.
Was there a guy out front with a banjo?
No banjo, but funnily enough, like maybe a half mile down the road when you leave town, quote unquote, which is a fucking intersection with a blinking light as a stoplight. Actually, no, not even a blinking light. It was just an intersection, and
there's a guy with a flashlight standing next to the sign.
You're never gonna see another fucking car. So it doesn't matter if you fucking stop or not. Who cares? Half mile down the road, there was a guy on his porch, and every time we went to that store, which was like throughout the week, we were at that store like two or three times, just picking up random things. Every time we would drive by the house he was sitting in front of, he'd wave. It was like his village job to sit and wave at traffic. And
well, on Tuesdays he waves his penis.
Thank God we missed that. But no, it was terrible. Why are we even on this topic? Oh, because
one last thing about that. Your brother one time came home from Chicago and went to college.
Is this a story about my brother's penis? Because I don't think I want to hear it.
No, not this one.
Okay.
And he gave me a call at 3 in the fucking morning. Woke me up. All he did was yell on the call, "Wesley, we're in Amish country." It's 3 in the morning, Jeremy. Fuck, are you calling me about this?
did he hang up, or did he like
that was, well, it was 3 in the morning. I was asleep. I was like, all right, cool, goodbye, and I hung up the phone.
Next time, stay there till morning, then call me.
Just tell me about how you made butter with Jedediah, and just dear God, stop, leave me alone.
Anyway, let's move on because I feel like that story will devolve into Jedediah's penis. So.
Yeah, games.
We were talking about, because you hit a bird.
I hit a bird, yeah. I killed a bird.
This is the mini show. We're going to talk about whatever.
We're talking about life in this.
So we were driving through this podunk town at night, and a deer jumped into the road, and the car in front of us clipped it, like, right on the back. Like, it hit it right square in the ass. The car stopped. The deer kept going. The deer was like, fuck you. It just ran off.
Like, it happens every day. Like, another deer.
I mean, apparently, like, we did see a fair amount of deer diving across the road up there, which apparently is a common thing, and it's something, it's the most interesting thing that happens there, so everybody fucking talks about it. I was miserable. Yeah. I was miserable on
I
this trip.
I bet you were. I didn't know it was, like, in the middle of nowhere, and
everything
sounds
was,
like I'm visiting my relatives.
Everything
was, flashbacks from my childhood.
Everything was 2 hours away. Everything was fucking 2 hours away. Oh, we have a 2 and a 3 year old, so we have to load them into a car. And anyway.
The city pretty much consisted of a mall. that was the city.
All right. Yes, video games.
Video games are a thing.
Let's never do that again. Never again. Nice. So I beat Tokyo Mirage Sessions. I didn't 100% everything. Some things I did end up 100% just incidentally, like the side quests for the characters I made a point of 100%ing, but things like, I talked a little bit on a previous show about their stage levels that I did end up 100%ing for most of the characters just because I used their session attacks so much that it just kind of happened by the last level. I was maxing all that stuff out. I didn't get all the weapons, and I didn't, I don't know if everyone has like a max like level, but maybe they do. I didn't find out. But I did a pretty thorough breakdown of like the mechanics of the game and the structure of the game before, so I'm not going to be getting into that again. I'm actually, at the end of the month here, I'm going to be doing a full podcast with friend of the show from the This Nintendo Life podcast, NBZ. He's coming onto the show in order to just do a full breakdown of this game like we did for Xenoblade with Ryan. So it'll be like an hour and a half of us just talking about this game.
Dear God.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be good. I did want to address one thing though before closing it out until we do our big podcast on this game. I have heard some complaints about the pacing in this game. That's probably like the biggest complaint that I've heard.
It seemed pretty tedious a little bit that I've watched.
Well, what happens is,
like, you're chasing this freaking skull through these corridors, you're like, oh dear God.
Oh yeah, that part was kind of annoying. That was toward the end though. I think one of the things that people complain about most is that when you're in these dungeons, toward the beginning of the game, there are always like story prompts that make you leave the dungeon, go do, go just have a random conversation, then come back. So there's one in particular that sticks out in my head.
We need to do this so people don't die and protect people, but I got a photo shoot in five.
I gotta learn this song. Yeah. Actually, that's
exactly that. And sure enough, got a text from mom. She's drunk again. You know. I don't know why, but mom's drunk.
The boss, the mom of the group, if you will, the lady who runs the talent agency, she is a bit of a drunk.
Oh, well, there you go. And they address that. There you go.
No. And then what that ends up doing is it sort of breaks up your momentum of going through these dungeons. So each dungeon is essentially broken up into sections by these warp points that will bring you back to the beginning of the dungeon so that you can leave. And there are, in the first few dungeons, points where you have to leave the dungeon. And one that sticks out most in my head is there's a point in a dungeon where you encounter this boss character, this character you're pursuing throughout this maze, and he says, like, oh, well, if you want to fight me, one of you is going to have to learn this song and sing it. And you're like discussing with all the other characters, like, okay, well,
what does that have to do with it? Can't we just fight you?
I don't know, there's some sort of narrative conceit I wasn't paying attention.
Like, I'm not allowed to punch you in the face because I have to sing a song first? That seems weird.
Oh, okay, I remember what it was. He wasn't the enemy, he was being possessed by an enemy, and in order to purge, like, his possession, you had to sing this song.
Okay.
Because Japan.
Just Japan.
And it literally made you leave the dungeon, and not figuratively, I don't know why I used the word literally there, it made you leave the dungeon. And
figuratively or literally?
Stop it. It made you leave the dungeon to have a conversation outside the dungeon and then warp right back in. And it's all very artificial in the context of the narrative. But the point of all that is, and it actually goes away toward the end of the game, these sort of artificial dryouts. The point of doing it at the beginning of the game is because the game is showing you that a lot of times it's beneficial to leave the dungeon, upgrade your gear, learn some new skills, then go back in. And that's why they have these checkpoints set up to basically dividing dungeons into like three or four little mini sections. Because it is very beneficial to, if you have like gear maxed out, to leave, change it out, and keep growing different skills. So they're using these contrived narrative conceits to draw you out in order to also give you the chance to, hey, while you're out here, do some upgrading too, because this is very beneficial to the rest of the game. Could there have been a better way to do that? Probably. Yeah. You probably, like, maybe if you just upgrade and change out your gear when you're still in a dungeon, like maybe use those warp points, like those warp points and save points as, like in Final Fantasy X. Let's go back to that. Well, you have those spheres, and when you're those spheres, you can save, you can go to your airship, and you can play Blitzball. So yeah. In Tokyo Mirage Sessions, you can save, you can warp, or you can just upgrade your stuff from there.
That'd be cool.
And that would be a lot more friendly. But as it is, I mean, it at least serves a purpose. To me, like, I'm being at home with the kids and trying to play this game, I never knew when shit was going to go down or when I was going to have to go somewhere or, like, make them lunch. So having these quick exit points was beneficial to me. But anyway, I'll shut up about it for now and wait till we do a full podcast, which we'll probably end up posting in September. But it's a very good game. I highly recommend it. And let's move over to Fire Emblem Fates Revelations, which I just finished on the 3DS.
I've been playing a lot more of
Oh yeah?
Fucking, what's it called?
Awakening?
Awakening!
Did you end up starting over like you were thinking about?
No, I think I'll do alright.
Okay.
Just, I gotta do a lot of weird grinding, and they give you so many characters I want to use.
Mm-hmm.
It's a giant pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting more children. Like, I got,
Oh, are you using any of the children characters?
I'm trying to, but they start at fucking level 10.
Yeah.
And so it's a giant chore to level them up, because at that point in the game, you're in chapter 14 when you start getting the children.
Right.
They pop up at level 10. The guys you're fighting are either 18 or their class changed to low level final classes.
Right.
So they're a giant pain in the butt to level up.
So you either got to do like DLC or like the skirmish battles.
Exactly. And the skirmish battles, based on where they are, like one skirmish battle I did, they're level 5, 6. I'm like, I'm not getting any experience from this. This is pointless to do this fight. It's
yeah.
it's really difficult to get them leveled up. Lucina, just because you get her the earliest, is actually about to class change. So she's actually keying out perfectly fine with the rest of my team.
Mm-hmm.
But I got Morgan, which is easy to level to her up because she's just a healer. So I just take her every mission, boom, boom, go heal stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other ones are difficult. There's the Night Chick. There's the Archer Girl that I still need to pick up. And then picked up a Wayne I picked up.
Oh, nice.
And he's really cool. But he's level 10. It's tough. It's tough how they do that. Oh, they do. I'm going to have to like really just level grind and pretty much...
They do pay off because they'll end up with the ability to have higher stats than their parent characters. And plus they'll get some beneficial skills along there with them.
Mm-hmm.
I never really tinkered with the child characters until it was close to the end of the game. I was like, oh, let's just take you through some of the DLC a bunch of times and level you up. So they were never really a crucial part of my team. It'd be kind of cool to see, like, do a run through like just the second half of the game with just child characters. I wonder if you could pull that off. But anyway,
it'd be tough. But I want to use them because they're pretty cool. But
yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea to have these characters that sort of are a little bit more fluid with what they're going to be. Because if you like pair together different parents the next time around, they'll be slightly different. They might be different class. They might have different skills. Their hair color will be different or something.
I didn't know their classes are dependent on that as well.
Yeah, I think they're...
Like, Morgan is the child of the main character that you do.
Right.
And the cleric girl, what's her name, Lissa?
Oh, Crom's little sister?
Yeah. I did that. And I got Morgan, which was a cleric, and then Owain, who's a mercenary.
So, Owain, who's Owain? Whose child is that? I can't remember.
Their son.
So okay, they're right.
The daughter
right,
and the son.
Because
they're both that.
So usually a pair of parents will have one child, but because that's the main character.
Yeah, two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When I paired, let's see, who did I pair together? I paired together my main character and Tharja. Morgan ended up being a strategist.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so she was the character of the, she was the main character.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Owain is Lyssa's. I think I paired Lyssa with Vike, and he ended up, I think he was a mercenary.
Yeah, he was a mercenary for me.
Anyway, we digress.
Good stuff, we digress. Go ahead and talk about the actual game.
So Revelations.
Stuff.
It combines the really clever map design and really novel map design of Conquest with the more forgiving difficulty of Birthright. It's not super easy. I think it falls somewhere between Birthright and Conquest in terms of difficulty. It might lean slightly more toward Conquest.
Do you think they should have fired out these three different Fire Emblems like this? Like, is it worth it? Is it worth playing all three of them? Is it worth it just to... Which one would you recommend if somebody just wanted to play one?
My go-to would probably be Conquest. It is the most difficult. I think it has the most creative map design as well. Revelations is almost as creative with the map design and with the different obstacles in your path as Conquest. It's not as difficult, so that it's a solid entry point. Birthright is definitely my least favorite of the three. It's kind of the RC Cola to the Coke and Pepsi.
Now, which one was that? Because I know the difference between Birthright and Conquest. One was just a straight game. One was a world map game.
Conquest is the one that's just taking you from...
Chapter by chapter.
Yeah. And actually, Birthright is pretty similar. You're like roaming through a world map like you do in Awakening. But what you'll do is like you'll still be able to do skirmishes that pop up.
Hmm.
But you're just kind of selecting from a menu those things when they're available.
Oh, okay.
So none of them really quite go as far as Awakening, which is kind of a bummer. I kind of like that world map stuff from Awakening.
Yeah, that was That was a really cool mechanic.
Yeah. The thing with Revelations, the reason I would recommend Conquest over it is because in Revelations, they just throw a ton of characters at you. You have all of the most of the characters that are available to you from Birthright and Conquest. So there's a whole a narrative conceit where you have your siblings from the one country and your siblings from the other country, and you can get all of them in Revelations, and then they all come with two, they're called retainers, but basically every one of your siblings has two units that are closely associated with them. Usually when you're getting one of the siblings throughout the progression of the game, those two units will come with them. There are maps in Revelations where you are getting 4, 5, 6 new characters in that map.
Oh my god.
And it gets absurd. There's a ton to manage. And using extra missions, DLC, skirmishes that pop up is a necessity in Revelations, unless you just pick your favorite units and just roll them. Like, toward the end of the game, like in the last third of the game, I was like, fuck all these Hoshido units, all Nor, all Conquest characters. Let's just plow through this. I'm definitely more comfortable with the Conquest characters. The Conquest characters are characters, they have like the mercenaries, they have the cavaliers and paladins, they have more traditional mages, they're more familiar units, they have knights and generals. Whereas the Hoshido units, they're myrmidons, but they call them samurai. They have ninjas, which are thieves. They have Pegasus knights. But the Nor units have the Wyvern Rider, so they kind of divide up. And I just felt much more comfortable with the Nor units than the Hoshido ones.
Yeah, the Nor sounds like grill mercenaries to me.
Yeah.
Which is what you like.
Yeah, that's exactly like it.
Just give me the grill mercenaries.
I found it was so much easier to find a balanced team. Like with Hoshido, it was hard to find really good axe users. So you're running through a lot of the game with swords and lances, and they did some adjustments to the weapon triangle that maybe it has something to do with like the way they were distributing units and how you don't really have a really good axe wielder when you're going Hoshido side. So you have like this one unit, and when you're playing Hoshido side, they've kind of messed with the weapons. Swords they call katanas. The spears they call nagintas and axes they call clubs. They behave the same way as the weapon they're taking place of. They just call them some different, so there's a level of unfamiliarity. And what they also do is they give you, you get like 3 or 4 thieves, ninjas, when you play Hoshido side. And they have, they use shurikens or throwing knives, and they behave exactly like lances, I want to say. So what they did, you know, you have the sword, lance, axe triangle.
Yeah, the rock, paper, scissors of weapons.
And you have, like, there are things sitting on the outside. You have bows, you have like throwing knives or shurikens, and you have magic. And they'll just kind of, they have their different effectivenesses, but they don't really factor into that triangle.
No.
In Fates, all three of these games, they throw them in there. So bows, I want to say, behave like swords. So they're weak to lances, strong to axes.
That's weird.
Shurikens. And I might have these mixed up
because so now there's like a whole other level to.
Sort of. It's still the same thing, but you have to think. No, you know what? I think I might have this confused. I think bows might behave like axes, because bows are still effective against flying units, and then you also get the extra bonus of having them behave like an axe. Flying units are usually using lances.
Hmm.
It's all very weird. And hard to keep track of, because then you have like your mage, your magic user, and you have to think about what weapon the enemy has equipped. It's not making a huge difference. Like when you get toward the end game, you're throwing your berserker against anyone who's using a sword. It's like, fuck you, I'm gonna kill you anyway. I don't care about the balance of this. But early on in the game, you have to think about, okay, I have this magic user, but he's fighting someone with swords. Is magic good against swords? I can't remember. Whereas magic should just be effective against anyone.
I'm throwing a giant fireball at your face.
Right.
I don't give a shit if you're holding a stick or a sword.
Oh my god, he's got a lance. Better stay away from him with my magic. It doesn't.
I can throw lightning at him. Better stay away from his stick.
To me, I hope that they ditch this twist that they threw into the franchise.
It's nice to see that they're messing something with the formula a little bit. Trying something else. Well, and making it even more strategic.
And even though I didn't really particularly like the Hoshido units, I did like how they kind of mess with the naming conventions. And they mess with like different class upgrade things. You have units using different combinations of weapons, so they got experimental with this game, which is nice, but this is one of those experiments where I just hope they go back to normal.
Is there still split class changing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Split class changing. There's second seals, so to speak. I can't remember if they call them second seals in this game.
I really like that mechanic. The second seals was an interesting thing. I still don't really know what I want to do because I don't know how quickly I would burn through the games with the second seals in Awakening. So I don't know if I should use them here, if I should just class change in the last, or get more benefits. It's a weird little mechanic. Yeah, the second seals in there. Unless you have like the DLC maps and are just leveling the absolute crap out of these guys.
Yeah.
Second seals don't really seem that beneficial.
You can get through the game without using them for sure.
Oh yeah, you definitely can. I can tell that. I'm on chapter 14 and my guy's just now class changed. So I'm like,
Yeah. And really what...
Maybe I'll second seal them and then maybe when I hit 10, take them the last thing. Don't take them all the way to 20 again. Because that seems... Like it would just be forever by the time you get
to... Yeah, if you reach the point where they can class change and you second seal them to sort of reset their first class and build it more to build up more stats, you're going to be maxing out first class stats before you get to 20.
Yeah, it's not going to be that beneficial.
Yeah.
Maybe even just wait till they get 10 second seal them if I want to divert them to a different class.
Mm-hmm. Pick up some new skills or something.
Yeah, well...
But yeah, they've thrown all sorts of wrinkles into this. But this is... Getting back to that whole weapon triangle, that's just something where I feel like figuring out the effectiveness of bows and magic was fine the way it was. I don't think that that's something that they needed to tinker with. One other thing that I did tinker with quite a bit throughout the game was the forging mechanic. Because they do some funny things with the way weapons operate, which... Again, I hope they go back to normal. So we talked a little bit before about how weapons don't break. And I think I might have mentioned this on another show. Rather than breaking, the higher up in class that you get, that your weapons get, like going from iron to steel to silver, the more detrimental effects those weapons will have. So a silver sword is the most powerful sword, the most powerful common sword that you can get. But after you use it, it will drop a couple of your stats until it's your turn again.
Hmm.
So if you're using this most powerful sword, like if you're going around killing and not like leaving yourself vulnerable in any way, it's no big deal. But if you're in a map with a lot of enemies, using a silver sword can be detrimental because you're exposing yourself just for using a better weapon. The way they balance this in the series before is just have it break sooner. You have a more powerful weapon, it's not going to last as long. So you're going to have to do some more item management with that. One thing that you can do in the Fates games is you can mess around with the forging. So iron swords are your basic sword. There's bronze sword below it, but most of your characters are going to be out of the box able to use iron swords. Iron swords have no detrimental effects. And what you can do is just forge a bunch of iron swords or iron bows or whatever together, and you can make them as powerful or even more so than silver swords or silver lances with no detrimental effects.
Wow, gee.
All you have to do is have enough cash to buy your resources, and then you also have to have enough of the gem materials that... You get from your My Castle, your base, your barracks, you have like the little mines that you can, you get one in Birthright, one in Conquest, and you actually get two in Revelations for your base. And then what you can do is through the internet, you can visit other people's castles and collect some resources from them as well. So it's not terribly difficult to farm these materials that you need to forge weapons together. It just takes a little bit of work. All you gotta do is just forge a few swords together and you get a more powerful sword with no detrimental effects that'll never break.
Meh.
So it's a way around this. But the system wasn't broken. The system wasn't broken, so why fix it? I don't really quite understand why they messed around with these two different mechanics. Like it definitely doesn't ruin the experience. It's still like a fun set of three games that'll take you 30 hours to get through each one. Cool. But, I mean, it's something that, you tinkered with it, cool. Put it back to normal. Let's get back to basics here. Yeah, I think that's pretty much going to close the book on this Fire Emblem Fates series of games. Oh, you asked before, is it worth it to play all three? I don't know. Maybe. Definitely play Conquest. Revelations, like if you're super invested in the story, sure, Revelations definitely has the most complete story arc. The other two versions kind of end on incomplete notes because Revelations is supposed to be like the real narrative of the game. And whereas with Birthright and Conquest, you only get like fractions of it. Yeah, if there's one that you can skip, it's Birthright. Yeah. But Conquest is definitely the must play out of the three.
But that's the thing also with if you want to like tackle all of them, if somebody is like a budget gamer like myself.
Sure.
It's difficult playing these games because they're $30 a pop for a DS game. And it is a very in-depth game and everything like that. But the thing I've noticed is 3DS games and everything don't really drop in value.
It's true.
Like some old...
It's true.
Like Diamond's still like $20.
Yep.
It's crazy. I don't under... It's crazy.
Yeah, these DS and 3DS games definitely hold value.
I don't understand.
Especially first-party games. Like first-party Nintendo games, they just...
They just do not want to lower their prices on that eventually. Like this has been out for 4 years, but still give me $50. I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm going to have the game of the year version of it eventually and drop it to 20.
I wish, like, at a certain point, like, the games have only been out since February in North America. I wish they would get a little bit more.
That's fine with those. I understand that. I was just saying in general, I was in GameStop today even. I was just looking at it. I was like, holy hell, this is still.
Like, I do wish for certain things they would get more aggressive with their pricing. Like, they just dropped the price of a bunch of games. They went. Not Player's Choice, whatever they call it. Like Nintendo Selects. They added a bunch more to their.
Ocarina of Time made it.
So. I'm gonna call it Player's Choice because I like it better. They put a bunch of games on their Player's Choice list. They did like Wind Waker HD, the Lego City Undercover games, Animal Crossing, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about that. Give a thorough list when we do the official show. But I wish they would get more aggressive with some of their price structures for a game like Awakening. Like, Awakening, I don't think has gotten a price drop. Or games like Majora's Mask 3D. It'd be cool to see that one get the player's choice treatment so that people can get in at a lower price point. Meh. Or, like, fuck it. They're like the Wii U. The Wii U is still $300. Time to throw out the playbook on that one. Bottom it out.
Try to make some money back.
No, fuck it. I don't care if they make money or not. Just drop the price and give some people a reason to own the thing. Like, leave people with no excuse to not own Wii U. Just get more.
I feel like you're aiming that towards me, John.
Nah, you're fine. I mean, if like a Wii U was $150.
Oh, hell yeah.
Could you say no to it?
No, we can't say no to
that. It'd be ridiculous.
That's why I got the PlayStation 2 the first time I ever bought it. It dropped $100.
Yeah.
For a brief sale thing right after they got hacked. I was like, not the PS2, PS3.
Oh, PS3, right.
It dropped $100. I was like, yeah, I can't say no to this right now.
I just won't connect it to the internet for a few months.
It's no big deal. We're good.
I actually didn't get a GameCube until it dropped to $100. That was more about, you know, me having my first job rather than, like, I didn't have $100 anyway.
What was the first expensive thing you bought when you got your first job and everything?
Probably the GameCube.
Mine was an iPod Shuffle.
Oh.
No, not Shuffle, Nano. iPod Nano. Hey, you had it for a May time. Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah, I did actually have that
iPod. You still have the Nano that you had to trade in?
Yeah.
You traded my Nano in because there was defect.
There's a recall. Yeah, there's a recall on it. So yeah, I shipped it back and they sent me a different... Actually, I think it was a Shuffle at that point. Anyway,
it was a Nano.
Okay, I believe.
Whatever.
All right, why don't we take a quick break and then come back with some more stuff.
Okay.
Alright, hit me.
Alright, Hearthstone cards. Yeah. We're doing... What's this one?
Yeah, that's good. Start with that one.
That's a new one from the new thing. They came out with a new expansion for Hearthstone. Because Hearthstone does this interesting thing where they go... there's the actual... I don't know what they call them. There's adventures, and then there's card packs. And card packs are like tons of things. It's the major card thing. But the way to get those cards is by opening packs or by creating them. And then they release these adventures. And these adventures, they typically, in the course of, like, I think the first month it comes out, every week they unlock another wing of it. And they're typically about four wings. So four chapters you play through.
Sounds great.
And through each chapter, you unlock cards. And these cards are guaranteed, like, by this adventure, you get these cards, but you unlock them as you play through it against NPCs and blah, blah, blah. They just came out with a new one of an adventure. It's called One Night in Karazhan. Really weird cards. The majority of it, I think, are kind of meh. There's a couple of really annoying things you can do with some of the cards that are in there. But overall, it's kind of mediocre. Some of them are just kind of crap. But John wants me to pick random cards.
Let's do it. Let's do like three or four random cards.
Take a guess. I literally have a list of all these cards right here. I have no idea. I'm just going to take my finger, flip through the screen, point, and that's going to be the one. So
I'm going to guess what it's going to do. All
right. Well, Doom.
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 All right. Is it... how does Hearthstone work? Do you have like creature cards and like magic cards?
It is a magic card.
Okay. Doom.
From the Warlock class.
Doom is... a card that will do 9 damage in 4 turns.
Oh, that'd been pretty crap. No, not. Doom is a 10 cost card. Destroy all minions, and you draw a card for each minion destroyed in that way. So I'm gonna find out.
Wait, what? So you play the card, it costs you 10.
Let's say there's 5 minions on the field.
Okay.
And you're like, crap, I can't deal. Oh my god, it's going off. I can't deal with them. You play that card, it'll wipe out all the minions off the field, and every minion that dies, you draw a card. So you, 5 minions died, I draw 5 cards. But it's a 10 cost, so you can't do anything else that turn.
The opponent, like, so...
No, you draw.
So you're destroying your opponent's minion cards.
All minion cards.
Okay.
Destroy all monsters, destroy all minions, draw a card for each.
Wow. That's mean. It's like, hey, all your stuff is dead, and by the way, I get more cards.
Yeah.
All right. Hit me again.
Hit you again. We are going to go with... trying to find... Anything can happen.
What?
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen?
Anything can happen. Oh my gosh. Sorry, my phone's ringing at me.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. I fucking hate this card.
Is another magic card.
Indeed, for the paladins.
And anything. That is a card that... I don't know, it turns all of your monsters into fish types. I don't know. It's bizarre.
There is a creature in World of Warcraft called Murloc, which is like this weird little frog fish thing.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a 10 cost card again. I'm in the 10 area, okay. So apparently we're just going to do those because I can't turn page. 10 cost, summon 7 Murlocs that died this game. It's a super annoying card because you're sitting there and you're killing these stupid weak little Murlocs throughout the course of the game. And all of a sudden on the last turn you play Anything Can Happen. Summons like 3 Murlocs that have charge. Oh, 2 Murlocs that have charge and 2 that boots them. And it's just the most annoying thing. I lost to it earlier. I was very, very frustrated to die these stupid little
It revives things that you just kind of killing throughout the game.
Yeah. It summons 7 Murlocs that died this game. It is super annoying.
So if your opponent is playing a lot of these things, you know exactly what's about to happen.
Yeah. Like, I know it's coming. But you gotta deal with it. And the thing that really got me earlier is he played 2 of these spell cards. So he summoned 2 of them with charge, and 2 of them did boost, because I killed them throughout the game. I wiped them out again.
Right.
He played the card again. It summoned those same 4, and summoned another set of 4 of them because they died again. So it like counted as other ones that died.
Shit.
So it was really fucking annoying. The last one we'll do, Ragnaros Lightlord.
That's clearly a creature card.
Clearly. For the paladins as well. Again. I'm saying this one because I also lost to it earlier. And I fucking hate
Those the Lightlord. Huh? Alright. Clearly it's just 10 cost or even. You know what I keep thinking of? I keep thinking of Guilford the Lightning from Yu-Gi-Oh!
I love that gang.
So when you play this card, it destroys all of your enemy's creatures.
Mm-hmm. No.
Aw, damn.
It's a play on another kind of card called Ragnaros, which was, they're both eight cost cards, minions, 8 attack, 8 health. Ragnaros can't attack, but at the end of the turn, he'll deal 8 damage randomly to a target, so he'll rather blow up a minion or hit you for 8. Ragnaros the Light Lord would do the opposite. He can attack, but he will randomly heal one of your targets for 8 at the end of the turn. So if all your guys are healthy, he's going to heal you for 8 health.
Nice. It's
a pain in the butt. Because I hate paladins right now, because they're freaking heal monsters, and it's annoying as shit. Oh, God, I hate pallies right now.
All right. Well, let's move on. I got a couple of games I'm going to just give some follow-up thoughts on. I'm going to keep this brief, because I don't have too much to add about these games right now, but I am in the process of still playing Metroid Prime 2 Echoes on the Wii U. It was part of the trilogy of the Metroid Prime games that they released on the eShop back in January of last year. But I'm getting near the end. I have beaten all 3 of the main temples, and now I'm collecting more keys to go to the final temple and fight the final boss. They do this thing at the end of Metroid Prime 2. You remember at the end of Metroid Prime? Well, no, you never made it to the end of Metroid Prime. So at the end of Metroid Prime and Metroid Prime 2, you have to go on this collect quest throughout the entire world map to find these basically keys to enter the final area. In Metroid Prime, there are maybe 7 of them, and you can actually happen upon them just as you're playing throughout the game normally. In Metroid Prime 2, there are 9. And the ones that I have found are sometimes in areas I've already been. Sometimes they're areas that were locked out to me before due to a power-up. But so far, all of them, even if they're in an area I've already been, I wouldn't have been able to get to them because I needed a specific power-up in order to access them before. So basically, having to traverse the whole map again is a necessity in this game. I just have no motivation to explore this planet anymore. Like, I don't care. By the time I got the light suit, you get the light suit when you beat the third temple and complete like the power transfer, whatever bullshit this alien is making you do. And the last light suit allows you to move anywhere throughout the, like, even in the poison air of the dark side of the planet. You can move throughout there without losing any health. It's super useful. But all of the flip-flopping back and forth that I've had to do, all of the going back and collecting things that I've had to do, I just have no motivation to, like, move throughout the game. It's just not fun to move.
That was the downside with Echoes, in my opinion. So, yeah. Well, back and forth, you're just looking at an altered version of your current thing. But the thing that really gets me through Metroid games is, oh, when's the next power-up? What's the next cool thing I can do? Let's work towards this. It doesn't give you clear objectives, really, to work towards an Echo. So the whole thing just kind of boggles down. You're just doing point A, point B, point A, point B. It drags on. And it's got this bland... I know it's not, but it feels like it's just a really gray...
No, no, no. I think you're absolutely right. When you think
there's
of
no
like
real depth to this one,
when you think of the Fendrana Drifts or the Magmor Caverns or the Chozo Ruins in Metroid Prime, there are very
or the freaking Skytown in
or Metroid Prime 3. You got Skytown,
God,
or Ibrio with like the fire, like the pools of flammable gel that are lying around everywhere.
Or even the typical jungle area was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I believe that was also a different part of Brio. But yeah, like these areas all have personality, whereas in Metroid Prime 2, the for the first half of the game, all of the areas are going to be nearly indistinguishable from each other. Like there's not much personality in terms of the art direction in this game, which again is something that just does not bode well for a game that's asking you to explore it. Like, there's nothing, hardly anything new or interesting to move around. Like, the third area that you go to is, like, very sci-fi futuristic, which is interesting for the most part, but it's, you know, 10 hours into the game that you're getting to this first place that's interesting. And they throw so many different powers. Like, there are so many different doors that you can open. It is super easy to lose track of, like, oh, hey, there's a door I can't go into yet. I got to remember to come back here when I get the power up for that. I'm nearing the end of the game, and every time, like, I come up to a purple door, I have to think to myself, now, what the fuck opens a purple door? I can't remember, and it's the Seeker Missile. Just, you know, as an FYI. But it's just not fun to backtrack and try your new powers in places you've been before. But anyway, I don't have too much left to go. I've been using the guide that I have pretty heavily as a map. And I talked about before how I think when I first talked about restarting this game, how I didn't want to use the guide at all. No, it's become a necessity.
Not because of difficulty, but because...
Because it's just not fun. Like, I just want to
get through it.
I just, like, if the game, like, put the marker down, like, this is where you want to go next, I'd be doing that. I'm using the guide as, like, hey, this is the route you want to go to get to your next thing that you need. Great, let's move it. Let's keep going. And, yeah, I'm going to finish it, because I'm so close, but I don't see myself...
I can't remember. Have you been this one before?
Twice.
I have been it before.
Okay. Yeah, but it's been quite some time, and I never played it with the pointer controls, which is good. Like, the pointer controls work really well. It's a lot easier to aim at specific targets, and, like, a lot of the boss fights I remember being a lot harder, but with the pointer controls, it's been quite a bit easier. But, yeah, I can't see myself ever trying to play this game again. I don't know if I'm going to have any wrap-up thoughts on it, so this might be us closing the book on Metroid Prime 2 Echoes. It's hard to recommend. It's really hard to recommend this game.
If you have to choose between this or hanging yourself in the nuts with a hammer...
I'd go with Echoes.
I guess I will. I guess I'd say that.
Yeah. I mean, hitting yourself in the nuts with a hammer is over quicker. But, like, when, you know, when you have, like, when this game is
both
just...
Both have a chance to equally scar you.
Yeah. When you have Prime 1 and Prime 3 Corruption just as easily accessible, those are clearly the games to go.
Just skip it.
Yeah.
Just skip it.
And, oh, a couple more follow-up thoughts on Xenoblade Chronicles
X. I was about to say, didn't you do a show on this?
Yes.
And you still can't wrap up all your thoughts
Well,
on
we,
it?
Well, what we did was we did a show on Xenoblade Chronicles for the Wii.
Yeah.
And we did a few thoughts on Xenoblade Chronicles X, but we didn't get really into specifics about where we were in the game. I just wanted to say, I'm still plugging away. My map survey rate is at 85%, maybe just a little shy.
Oh my god.
I've been doing some weapon augmenting in preparation for this big boss fight that's coming up. It's not like I've beaten the main game, this is a side boss. That's harder than the final boss, but...
As they typically are.
Yeah. What this has done, like, trying to do these weapon augments, and for anyone unfamiliar, there's a shop that you can go to that, oh god, what's a good comparison? You know, Final Fantasy VII, materia slots.
Okay.
You can add slots onto your weapons, but, you know, instead of, like, that giving you ability to use magic or summon like materia would, it would add... like an element to your attack. One thing that I'm going for right now is, like, there's a gravity elemental. It's kind of like dark, to put in Final Fantasy terms. But you can add that element to your attack and make enemies that are weak against gravity attacks more susceptible to your attacks. And you can also do that onto your armor. You can add slots into your armor, and you can increase your resistance to flare attacks, like fire attacks or electrical attacks, that kind of thing. And as I've been messing around with that, trying to prep for this boss fight, it's really led me into figuring out how to farm and exploit these things called reward tickets. And reward tickets are things that you get, they're rewards that you get for doing non-progress related missions. So when you start up the game, you're connected to the internet, you join a squad, and you will be given this squad mission. It's not directly in your face, it's not a mission you accept, it's just something that's active. You'll notice in the lower right corner, it'll have five icons down there and a countdown timer. And those five icons down there will indicate what you're supposed to do in order to complete this squad mission. It's usually killing enemies, sometimes it's gathering things, but then
when you're moving throughout the world, just going about the regular game, if you see a white S above a particular enemy, that's part of your squad mission. And if you kill those things or collect those things that you need, you will be given reward tickets. And reward tickets you can trade in at a terminal in your barracks to just give you items that can be hard to come by. Items that an enemy will drop that can be sometimes, that will be rare drops. You can just go buy for these things, which is nice because you won't have to be killing enemies over and over again just trying to get these things. There's also, like, you can use that same terminal to accept real quick missions, real quick squad missions that will net you 20, 30 reward tickets, that kind of stuff. So there are things that I should have been doing. I should have been saving these reward tickets from the beginning of the game for these rare drop items had I known, but I was using them to clear basic missions, which, like, you accept a mission, it's like, oh, go find this many fangs from this enemy, which is a common drop. I would accept it. I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to go buy them. So I went and bought them, and it gave me a little bit of experience, and it helped increase my affinity with my party member. That's what I was mostly using it for. But I'd been better off with saving them. That's okay. I've learned how to farm them now. So all is well with the world.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's like anytime you get into, that's the thing about this game, anytime you get into one system, it's going to lead you into three more. Like, okay, well, how does this all work? And basically, I spent maybe 12 hours over the past month since I last talked about this game just getting ready for this boss fight. And it's led me down so many other rabbit holes that I'm maybe halfway prepared
as I wanted to
be. So yeah, still got some work to do. Oh, because what I've also been doing is I've been clearing heart-to-heart conversations. Remember, like, in Xenoblade, there were those icons. You had, like, this character moment.
Yeah, it was the dumbest thing.
Yeah. It was pointless. It didn't serve any purpose other than, like, if you wanted more story. In this one, for most of the characters, it does serve a purpose of filling in that part of your map and getting you, like, a tenth of a percent more toward your survey, right?
So I've been knocking. Which is very important.
Yeah, sure is. You gotta get that 100%. And I cleared a lot of those. That gave me a couple of percentage points. Also opened up a couple more affinity missions, which are cool because those are missions with a bit more beefy goals than just go collect this or go kill one of those things. So, and it's an easy way to build up your affinity between characters and get a couple more percentage points toward your completion. And while I was tinkering with all this other stuff, I also got my first level 60 Skell, which is very cool. It's the highest level Skell you can get in the game because 60 is your max level. And most of these, actually, now that I think about it, all of them, you have to go and get custom parts for, either by using those reward tickets that I mentioned before or by killing enemies and farming items off of them. And when I first look at the menu of all of the, there's like maybe a dozen level 60 Skells that you can build using these item drops that you need to find. One of them was just ready for me to build right away just from playing throughout the game normally. I was like, yep, I'll take you. Thank you very much. And that led me into trying to, like, going through my list of weapons that I had gotten just from enemies dropping them and putting them onto some different Skells. So my main character's got a level 60 mech, and a couple of my side characters have level 50 mechs that have some custom weapons on them that are pretty effective. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, progress is slow. I'm really in heavy grind mode, but once I beat the boss that I mentioned in the beginning, that I mean,
it's time to start over.
Right, so it's gonna start a new game, build a new character. Once I beat the boss that I mentioned at the top of this segment, I will be able to fight that boss over and over again in a, like, there's like a quick boss fight mode, like a quick setup that you can do, and I'll be able to farm an item off of that boss that I can use to make more custom mechs. And the feedback loop will continue.
Dear God.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, let's take one more quick break and come back. I'm not going to do all the games that I have left. I'm probably just going to do...
You had like 9, didn't you? Holy hell.
I have 5 games left.
Oh my God.
I'm just going to do 3 of them. We'll save the other 2 for another time.
All right.
So you remember when we first started podcasting, we did like 2-hour shows once a month?
Yeah.
And then we split it into 4 shows so we could do 30-minute shows once a week?
Yeah.
Now we do like 2-hour shows once a week.
Yeah, well, you know, that's...
So speaking of brief experiences that don't take a long time to explain, you're playing World of Warcraft.
I am playing World of Warcraft.
Yes, indeed.
See, the thing with the World of Warcraft, which makes me sad, is that I joined it really late, and it's... I don't know what the hell this game's lifespan's gonna be.
I mean, it's
they just
like
keep fucking going.
10 years, right?
Something ridiculous. But I joined... the latest expansion is Legion, and the one that came out before that is Mists of Pandaria. And that's where I joined. So I missed...
Oh, you jumped in with the pandas!
I jumped in with the stupid pandas. And it makes me sad, because the pandas are fucking retarded. And anyone out there who's got a little panda thing, you should be ashamed of yourself. God. That and that terrible monk class. But, you know, I just don't find it entertaining. But the thing I really enjoy about World of Warcraft is... You talk about these games like Xenoblade and everything, about their expansiveness and so much to do and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
WoW is mind-boggling. Like, I can't even wrap my head around everything. There's dungeons within dungeons, and all those dungeons you can go to on the world map and, like, enter them normally. There's tons of mounts you can collect. There's a bunch of leveling. And it's incredibly insane. And the way that they keep it fresh and they change it up every once in a while. Classes get overhauls. The classes get nerfs and buffs. It's ridiculous. This new Legion is really cool. If anybody hasn't played the new World of Warcraft lately, Legion seems pretty cool. Right now they're doing this little pre-event thing, where they release the new class, the Demonhunter, which I haven't gotten yet. I haven't gotten the expansion yet, but there's things they did to the actual world where there's these invasions, and you go through 4 stages through these invasions. They just pop out in a couple of areas throughout the map here and there. And as the month has progressed, they've shown up more rapidly, and things have gotten a little bit more hectic, and little things show up, and new quests show up, and they're kind of like easing you into it. And then right on the 30th, bam, here's the expansion, go at it. It's going to be nuts. And these invasions, you're just...
So they're vamping a little bit. They'll be like, hey, here's content. Let's get people back into the game before
and
we
that's
hit
exactly
with a huge
what it was, because the servers had died down. All of a sudden, Legion started coming out and getting closer and closer and closer. Now there's just a crap ton of people everywhere. It's absolutely insane.
Did you continue with a character you already had, or did you start over?
I did. I leveled up... back in Mists of Pandaria, the top level was 90. Actually, no, there was Draenor. Oh, I completely skipped Draenor. Forgot all about that expansion, even. There was Mists of Pandaria, Draenor, and now Legion. And Draenor, I played Pandaria, skipped Draenor. I went back and I had to play through it to a degree, but I haven't done like any of the raids or anything. And now there's Legion coming out. So I skipped a whole big thing. But at the end of Pandaria, level cap was at 90. But then at the end of Draenor, it's 100. And now when Legion comes out, the level cap's going to be 110. So they're raising it 10 every time. So I had to get a couple of my guys up to 100, which was my Hunter and my Shaman. And I started leveling a Rogue right now, which Rogues are so much fun. I can't even fathom how much fun these guys are. They're just little guys. You're going in and out of combat, jumping all over the place, slashing, hacking. Oh, it's so good. It's so much fun. But there's just so much... Blizzard really puts a lot of interaction with their game, with the whole invasions and everything like that, and there are all these different kind of events that are going on, and they kind of ease you in with the story with it as well, which I didn't know any of the lore, the actual story of the game, but it's actually pretty cool. I don't even know what the hell's going on with Legion, though. I'm still completely babble about it. Learning bits and bits of it here, but it's kind of like watching a TV show and then also interacting with it. Because you got this whole thing going on and behind the scenes, and then you get to actually play through it, which is great. All these great big events, it's fantastic. Which I hate that there's a $15 a month fee for it, but I understand it because it is a massive game and there's a lot of things they need to keep going with it. So
sure. I mean, it's not like you're paying for nothing. Like,
yeah.
there's content.
Just there's so much crap going on. Game, it's mind-boggling.
All right, I'm gonna do 3 games here.
and then we'll close it out. All of these are Wii U eShop games that I have downloaded, you know, in the sort of lull between Tokyo Mirage Sessions and Paper Mario, which comes out in October. But I downloaded Super Meat Boy.
I was watching you play this.
And this game originally came out in 2010. There's a bit of a story behind. I think we've probably talked about this before. It was originally announced for WiiWare back in the day. The game got too big for what the cap on the size of the game for WiiWare was going to be. There were talks about maybe splitting the game up and doing episodic for WiiWare. That fell apart. And it has finally come to a Nintendo system on the for the Wii U, of course, in 2016, 6 years later. So this game had a ton of acclaim when it first came out, and it was probably impossible for it to live up to the hype. Now, everyone seems to fucking love this game, so of course I fucking hate it.
I watched you play this, and there is no way on God's green earth you'll ever put the controls of this game in my hands. I will not touch this with a 10-foot pole.
The game isn't totally worthless.
I understand that, but this will make me...
It's not very good either.
There's two games right now, Hearthstone and Overwatch, both Blizzard games,
mm-hmm.
that make me incredibly ragey and incredibly salty. And
World of Warcraft will do it soon. There's your third Blizzard.
No, that one actually. Mm. That one's fine.
I just wait for it.
No, it's all... Because there's no PvP to that unless you purposely play PvP with it.
Okay.
But Meat Boy... That seems just unnecessarily difficult.
We're gonna get to that.
And chaotic.
This game is certainly overrated.
I watched the other day, I don't know why I did this. I watched somebody do a speed run of it blindfolded.
Why?
They memorized the levels and did this in a speed run blindfolded.
So you see, here's the thing.
May God have mercy on your soul.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about Super Meat Boy. And why I don't think it's a particularly good game. You're talking about a person who is playing the game blindfolded. The game does demand precision, but it doesn't require it. And that seems to be like the same thing, but let me try to explain here. The game has some very mean traps and obstacles that will kill you if you don't make very precise jumps. Yes? But it doesn't necessarily have like this set path, like this is the path you have to take to achieve victory. There are a lot of levels where it's just kind of open. Like here's the level, figure it out. By the way, almost everywhere you go is going to die. You're going to get killed. And what you end up having is these ambiguous levels that let you try a lot of different things, most of which kills you. And it never establishes a rhythm to the gameplay. It's a lot of just beating your head against the wall until you get through it, which is why I'm a little surprised that someone could go through it blindfolded. They must have played through the game tons and tons of times, figured out their own path for every level, because most of the levels, it seems, don't necessarily have a specific path that you have to follow.
This is a general...
Yeah. Yeah. It'll kind of generally point you in the right direction. But for a game that... has so many things that will kill you and wants you to be very precise with where you're moving to afford you all of the freedom that it does is very counterintuitive to me. And it's not that it's completely devoid of intuitive design. And that's a box quote. Put that on the fucking box. This game is not completely devoid of intuitive design. It has some parts that are pretty cool. Like there are parts where there are portals that you're jumping through and like warping you to different sides, and you have to sort of aim your jumps to where momentum carries once you are through the portal to your destination. That's pretty interesting and fun, but by and large, it is a sequence of blades and wall kicks. And you can see all this stuff in Mario Maker. Granted, Mario Maker came out 5 years after this game, but you can see better stuff in Mario Maker. And Mario Maker is actually fun to control. Because like you were saying, Meat Boy does not control particularly well.
Yeah, and I guess you can kind of get that idea with Mario Maker. You're trying to go through an obstacle to get to the end. This one is just finish the level, but in that one it's to get to the weird... pink marshmallow thing. I don't even know what the hell that thing is.
It might as well just be a flagpole.
The boss is like a baby in a robot that's wearing a suit. I don't even understand.
It doesn't matter.
It's very weird. But, I mean, it's a different kind of feel with a Meat Boy to a Mario Maker, I feel.
Mario controls...
Like, that's an odd way to compare them.
Mario controls very tightly. Mario is... like, when you make a jump, you do not have to think, oh shit, I hope I land where I think I'm going to land. When you make a jump, if you don't land where you think you're going to land, you fucked something up. And Super Meat Boy, I'll make a really long jump and like, well, hopefully I land somewhere in the vicinity that I'm aiming. Because it's all very slidey and very floaty, which is not good for a game that wants you to be very precise with a lot of your jumps.
Well, that's the point of it. They kind of made the game extremely... They made this as not like a little casual... Well, it is a casual game, but they didn't make it so... You're just jumping through the thing. Because if they took away all of that, what would the fun be in it? If you can make all these precise jumps easily. Would it have been as...
I think it would be more fun because then it just becomes this puzzle obstacle course. Like, where do I need to jump? And you can see a lot of this stuff in Mario Maker levels where there are very specific paths, very specific routes you have to take through levels, and you have to make very precise jumps in order to get through them. And I like that kind of stuff.
They made this game to annoy you, to frustrate you. How does the controls even work in this game?
Not well.
No, I mean, how do you, like, literally say how do you do it? Because it's not like press X to jump. It's...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a button press to run. It's a button press to jump. It's exactly like Mario.
But there was something weird about the controls that...
There's a long jump that you can do, which is, again, like Mario. You're holding down the trigger button. There's
something weird with Meat Boy that I couldn't... There's something odd. Like, you weren't really steering it. You're just controlling...
Are you thinking about Star Ghost?
I am.
Have I been talking about Meat Boy this whole time and you're thinking about Star Ghost?
Just in the terms of the... No, I know exactly what you're talking about with Meat Boy, but I thought the controls were weird.
No,
that was Star Ghost we were talking about. That's right.
We'll get to Star Ghost in a second.
Wow, yes, I got that mixed up. Yeah, Meat Boy says run click.
Yeah. But like you were saying, most of the levels...
It wouldn't be a podcast without me saying something stupid in the middle of it, right?
We are going to talk about Star Ghost. You're just glancing at my notes and getting ahead of yourself.
I'm losing my mind. Don't stick up for me, John.
Fine, you're a piece of shit.
Thank you, appreciate that. Get it right, damn it.
But like you were saying, most of the levels, the game is intentionally punishing. And it's just trolly bullshit. You get surprised with obstacles that you couldn't see coming. It actually wouldn't be so bad if you could see a lot of the stuff coming and you could actually establish a rhythm to your platforming. But you never can because you don't know what's going to be sliding down the next wall or what's going to be below you when you're making a jump. There's this idea, especially around retro style games, that hard game design is good game design. I don't think that's the case. I reject the idea that hard game equals good game. This game was supposedly modeled around old NES platformers, games like Ninja Gaiden that were intentionally brutal. Ninja Gaiden's not a very good game either.
No, I hate Ninja Gaiden.
Because it's a lot like this. They'll just surprise you with enemies. You'll get like huge knockback into spike pits and shit. Like, Ninja Gaiden is not fun to play. It wasn't fun to play back in 1989. It's not fun to play now. Super Meat Boy, just because it's hard like an NES game, doesn't make it good. But anyway. Don't believe what you've heard. Super Meat Boy is not a good game. Don't play it.
Did you beat it yet?
No, not yet. I'm on the second to last world.
It's not a good game yet. You're still trucking along.
I do want to finish it. Maybe the last world will be so good, it'll turn me around. I doubt it.
Suddenly become a believer.
Yeah. I mean, one thing the game lets you do is when you get into a world, just like in Mario, there are stages throughout the world, and you move around on this little grid, and you can just skip levels. You can skip to the boss fight, as far as I know. There's no, like, requisite number of levels beaten to go to the boss. Oh, I'll say something nice about this game. The boss fights are cool, because they're not boss fights in the Mario sense where you're jumping on someone's head three times, which really has nothing to do with the rest of the game. The boss fights actually require platforming, which is great. And we've probably talked about this quite a bit. It's like the ending of New Super Mario Brothers on the Wii, where you're running from Bowser, crashing through all the bricks, and it actually requires you to be good at platforming in order to beat that boss.
Just live through it, yeah.
Whereas many other Mario bosses, it's just like, just be good at jumping on someone's head three times.
When he jumps up, slip under him, and the bridge will fall out. There you go.
Yeah, and it doesn't actually require platforming.
Spoilers for Mario, sorry.
Just every fucking Mario boss ever. But yeah, in Super Meat Boy, the bosses actually require you to do platforming, which is a thing you've been doing throughout the whole game. It's cool. It's a nifty idea to make the boss fights actually fit into the genre of game you were designing. Anyway, Star Ghost, also on the Wii U. This All right,
here's the weird thing.
Yeah.
Please. No, I can't remember the controls.
Okay, so...
Don't ask my opinion on it.
Star Ghost is a twist on a 2D space shooter. Like, R-Type. Or... Galaxian, that kind of thing. And
or that weird thing with the man with the banjo. What was that?
Phalanx.
Phalanx.
The man with the banjo.
Phalanx. Yes.
But
best game art ever.
Yes, indeed.
Fucking love it.
So in Star Ghost, rather than controlling the altitude of your ship just with the D-pad and having a button to fire and all that, it strips it down to just... It's like the rocket barrel levels in the Donkey Kong Country Returns games. You tap A or hold A to make your ship go higher. When you let go, your ship goes lower. All you're controlling is the altitude in a very imprecise way. Everything else, like your gun is on auto fire. It fires in a rhythm. You can collect orbs to increase the rate of which you fire and also the spread of your shot. So the more these orbs that you collect, the more your shots will spread out and hit a wider array of enemies.
And the cool thing about these power-ups is they actually have a time limit until they decrease. You have to keep collecting them as they go.
You know, is that cool?
I like it.
I mean...
I like it.
I do wish that there was a cap. Like, maybe if you get to stage 3 with a weapon, like your rate of fire, it will decrease down to stage 2, but then freeze there. Maybe until you take some damage or something.
I can understand that. But the game keeps it that way, so it still stays a challenge. Like, eventually, if you get into a rhythm, then all of a sudden you're just set. You're just...
True. True, as you know, when
it's
you get to
breeze through the rest of the game, it's another aspect that makes this a more challenging of these typical run-the-mill side-scrolling shooter.
With all these bullet hell games, yeah. Like Ikaruga, which is fucking challenging enough on its own.
Oh my god, we need to play that again one day. Do you still have that?
Yeah, I still have.
We need to play that again one day.
Look it up here with the PS2.
Let's do this.
One day we'll finish Ikaruga
if we want to kill ourselves.
And we'll see the thing with Star Ghost. You're right. At a certain point, like once you get your rate of fire and your spread maxed out, you are coasting through levels and hoping that your enemies are giving you drops in order to keep these things. Once you get to a point, like when you get... Shoot, I didn't get very far in this game. I think I like got to the third world. There's like 3 stages per world. And once you get to that third one, once all of your weapons deplete and you're down to just your single shot firing slowly... You're like, fuck, I am fucked here. There's no way I'm getting through this level, nor am I moving quickly enough in order to gain more power-ups. Mm-hmm. I feel like there could be a happy medium here, but this game, it's designed, like, you don't get continues. You get one life. You do have a health bar. It's not a one-hit KO. But the game is designed in order to try to get you to be better at lining up your shots and better at chaining shots together in order to try to get more power-ups. And they do this like mostly by the way there's an element of randomness to the levels. Like level 1-1, when you play through it the first time, it's going to be one way. When you play through these levels again, like once you die and continue from the beginning, there's going to be slight differences between the levels. They're never going to be exactly the same as they were before. They're going to be very similar. We're not talking about like totally randomly generated levels, but I would run through the game a couple of times. I haven't beaten it yet, but I would try to run through it a couple of times. And by the time I get to the second world, I'm thinking, I'm prepared. I've prepared myself to be like, this is not going to be the same as it was last time, so you always got to be on your toes. You can't just memorize your way through the game and memorize where all the power-ups are going to be.
So, but at the end of the level, as you're going through, you do collect some sort of currency.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end of the level, they give you option if you want to spend some of that to buy healing, if you want to buy a particular power-up.
True.
There's also a power-up that increases your traction, so you slide up and down easier and smoother. So you get less...
Yeah, you get more control.
You get a little bit more control, less...
Jankiness? I don't know. What's the word?
I don't know. What is it?
I mean, I like this game. It's only a couple bucks, so I think it's worth a try. It'd be also nice if it were a little bit easier to gain continues. I can understand why there's no continues. And I actually did get a continue one time. I think it has something to do with how much of a score you're raking up. Oh, and you mentioned the currency. I think is also worth mentioning that rather like sometimes like an enemy will sometimes drop a power-up. They're mostly dropping money.
Yeah.
And the money you use to buy temporary augments to your stats. Except your traction. I think your traction is permanent. But
yeah, that one I think you keep.
Anyway. But yeah, it's a pretty cool game. There's not too much to dissect here. It's pretty simple. And the last game I wanted to bring up is level 22.
Oh, we are talking about this? Yep. I saw this on your notes. I'm like, oh, we definitely have to get to that next time. But
No. We're going to talk about level 22. We're going to save... Kirby's
Dream Land.
Kirby's Dream Land 2 and Mario Sticker Star for another show.
Sticker Star? I thought we already discussed that before.
Sticker Star came out, yeah, back in 2012. We probably talked about it a bit then, but I never finished it.
Oh.
So I picked it up again and I had no idea where it was, so I just restarted. But anyway, level 22 is a...
So quirky.
It's a stealth game. It's
fantastic. Right out of the gate, I will say I recommend this. This is great. This game is fantastic.
I would too. It is a stealth game where it's got a funny little premise. You are a guy who is late for work. If he gets caught being late for work one more time, he'll be fired. So we've got to sneak into his office building and get to the floor where his office is without being seen by his coworkers.
Because apparently all of them are douchebags and will rat him out in a second.
Yeah, absolutely will. His boss is kind of a douchebag too. There was like that boss fight where, I don't know if you actually fought the boss of the company, but you were fighting like this guy and he had these computer monitors and he was like going around and he was like shooting you and stuff.
Well, you kind of fought him because you had to break a computer and then he went over to check it. And then you bash him in the head with a book.
Yeah,
you bash him in the head with a book.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. Like, because it's got this unique setting, it has to find these funny...
No notes for you.
We're shooting from the hip.
We're shooting from the hip on this one.
It has to find these funny ways to give you tools that make sense for the environment. I guess it doesn't have to do that, but it does, and it's kind of cool. So you'll, like, find a donut, and the security guards will be lured away by donuts. And most of the items that you pick up and use to interact with your environment accomplish either stunning someone so you can sneak by or luring someone away so you can sneak by. Those are the two major functions. And they, you can like poison your coworkers with like a laxative.
Oh, that was really good.
Yeah, or you can smack them over the head with a book. You're like going around vandalizing the office building you're working because
there's a part where you're absolutely destroying things.
You have to break windows in order to sneak out and access a different area. World 3, which is the one I just finished, is one that has a lot of conveyor belts, and you have to sneak along, like you have to find ways to activate the conveyor belts from a distance or up close in order to change the direction they're going so you can go through to the next area. There are, I believe, 5 worlds-ish and 5 stages per world. You're looking at like maybe 25 different levels to get through. And some of them are pretty lengthy, and they mix in these different adventure-type elements, which I suppose is probably pretty typical of a stealth game, where you're using items in certain locations in order to draw people away or to activate something. You can hide underneath a box, which is a nice little nod to Metal Gear. And I think they make a joke about it, to like, well, yeah, it's a box, but... This is real life, so if people see you moving in it, they're going to suspect something.
Yeah, it's something stupid.
Like. Yeah. And actually, like, the box, like, if a security guard sees the box anywhere, like, there's not supposed to be a box here, you just get automatically busted and have to restart the stage. Well, actually, you don't have to restart the stage all the time. There are checkpoints, so to speak, where if you've accomplished something and sort of moved into the next area where you have to figure out the next puzzle, it will give you that checkpoint. You just restart from there, so you don't have to do the same things over and over again.
And then at one point, like after you beat that one, your boss on that one level, I find it really funny because the game is really humorous sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like you're talking to a buddy of yours that apparently was fired and he's trying to help you get back there so you wouldn't be. Like right. Some guy on the phone you're calling. He's like, yeah. Oh, I remember this, do this and this and this. Like he's giving you pointers throughout the game. And then this one level, right at the very end, there's two doors and your buddy's like, oh, the one on the right. And then you watch the guy go in the one on the left. And there's like a conversation about, if this was a game and you were watching it, were you talking from the player's viewpoint or my viewpoint? Like, they break the fourth wall about this. You talk about screenwriting. It was incredibly... I cracked up at that. Yeah. That was funny.
Yeah, the game definitely is self-aware.
Yeah.
There's, like, collectibles that you can get in each level. There's, like, a little toy that you can find. And they'll reference different things. There's, like, Claw Guy who looks like Wolverine or something. So they have, like, these funny little nerdy things that you can do. And there's... something about like a safety deposit box in every stage and the code for it being hidden somewhere throughout the level or having something to do with it. I never could
find that. That was,
I don't know,
really well hidden.
I don't know what it is that they're asking. It's like a 6-digit code or something.
Yeah, something crazy.
But yeah, I'm not sure what exactly they're going for there, because it's pretty buried. Even on the first stage, I don't know what the code could have been. But anyway, yeah, this is it's a cool little game. I recommend it. Anything else you want to say about level 22?
No.
You'll take a peek at my notes.
See if I'll take a look at this. Level 22, stealth game. Have to sneak to avoid eyelines. Pretty cool level designs. Pretty short game.
Stop it.
Not much to dissect here. All right.
Yeah.
All right. That's the thing.
Yeah. I think that's going to close us out for this week.
Hour and a half. It's not a full 2-hour one.
That's all right.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Had my stupid ramblings, and then I had your in-depth this section. So, you know.
Next week is going to be the Super Nintendo show.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be Chrono Trigger.
It's another one where I'm just saying they're making dumb comments in the corner.
Well, you've played Chrono Trigger.
Oh, yeah, Chrono Trigger. Yeah, I'm playing. Yeah, oh, yeah, I know that game.
So, yeah, how many times have you played Chrono Trigger?
I think I played through it once, because it was long enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I tried to give it, like, you can start the game over and go again.
Yeah, you got a new game plus.
Yeah. I did a little bit into that, but it's a big game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to play through it on the DS in order to prep for the game. And I still got a ways to go.
Yeah, I got Fire Emblem Awakening, and I'm goofing around with Pokemon again, so...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, still working on that Poison team.
Oh, which version?
The blue. No, oh, red. Yeah, did we get by red?
Yeah.
I think I got red. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that in the Pokemon show.
Yeah,
so, Chrono Trigger is up next, and then the official show, and then we'll start off again with the Pokemon show in September. So, till next time, everybody.
So long.